your mic's dead.
We lost you, Logan. Nope. Yeah, wait, say...
A duck.
There you are.
You're back.
You swear it works.
Welcome to episode 203 of the PC Gamer Podcast for December 10th, 2009. This is your host, Logan Decker, and this week, we've got a first-person lip shooter of a podcast for you. Today in the PC Gamer Mobile AV Unit, I'm joined by Reviews Editor Dan Stapleton.
Hi-de-ho.
Previews Editor Evan Lottie.
I have nothing to say to you.
Alpha Intern Eric Belsos.
Josh also says hi and he's sorry he can't be here.
And Beta Intern and Golden Sandwich Bearer Prentice Getty.
Beta?
Well, you came second. By one day.
We'll speak about this later.
You should make them fight over it. And one has to establish themselves as the alpha intern. That's how it works with, you know, dogs and cats. But so should it be with interns.
Veteran podcast producer Andy Bauman is also in the house.
Hi. I was trying to figure out how I reload my lips, but couldn't figure that one out.
You just go like that.
Shoot off screen.
Yeah. Okay, before we start talking about gaming stuff, I just need to get this out of my system. Exploding chewing gum. That's what we're going to be talking about here, and it's not pretty. So if any of you are squeamish, you might want to skip ahead a minute or two. But did anybody else read about this?
Was that like the thing from Mission Impossible or something?
No.
Kind of, but the weirdest part is that it was an accident, because it was like in the Ukraine, and this kid was in his room. And I think his parent or whatever, they heard a popping noise coming from his room, and they walk in and, oh God, you know, it's just bad.
You know, anything like that, anytime anything like that happens anywhere near Vladimir Putin, I wonder if it's an accident.
Yeah. Well, you gotta, you know,
because that's some serious Kremlin stuff going on there.
Apparently he had the habit of dipping his gum as he chewed it into citric acid on his desk, vitamin C, you know? And the thing is he was also like a chemistry dude, and he had something else on his desk, and he dipped it into that, and it created this chemical reaction as he was chewing it, and boom!
That's a really good idea.
And blew his, you know, everything off. And that's just, I don't know, it haunts me. So I just wanted to share that.
Well, thank you for that.
Wow, yeah, like, no problem.
That's like powerful imagery without even having to look at anything.
Yeah, I know. Jeez. I know. So, you know, everybody out there, the holidays are coming. Please be careful and don't leave stuff on your desk that could blow up in your mouth if you chew on it. I should probably keep my mouth shut on this one, but I need answers, because when Mass Effect came out, I started playing it, but I was a little put off by the inventory system and the initial combat, so I put it away for a weekend. Well, when you work at PC Gamer, it's very easy to put the games down for just a moment, and then they get swept away by the current of other games that come in. So I'm ashamed to say that I never finished the game, even though I wanted to. I didn't even get started, really. So Mass Effect 2 is on its way. And I'm wondering, do you think I need to play the first one to get the most out of the second?
I don't think you need to, but I think you should.
Yeah, I think I should? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great game. And I do agree, actually, that the first level or so, like the opening area of Mass Effect 1, I mean, that nearly put me off the game, too. That had a very kind of weird, slow opening that just, it wasn't a good intro at all. So,
I'm wondering, are you talking about Eden Prime or the Citadel?
Eden Prime.
Oh, okay. I enjoyed Eden Prime. It's the Citadel that bogged me down.
Yeah, I mean, once I got to the Citadel, there was like some interesting like role playing stuff happening. The opening bit in Eden Prime. I don't know. It's hard to explain why it was.
I know. I can't really explain either. I just was playing it and just thinking blah, and I knew it was going to get better because everyone else was further ahead, but. You know, like I said, I just put it down for a second because I got kind of like, And then it just got kind of, you know, I never went back.
Yeah, but after you get, well, for me, after I got to the Citadel, it totally grabbed me and I just couldn't stop playing.
All right.
Dude, I mean, I know I went on about this when we were first talking about it, like probably tell the listeners press next because they're bored, but I really freaking loved the character generator and how it like integrated with the game. I felt like my character was so unique and amazing. And so to not have the same character carry over would be sad. Like you grow a connection.
Do you still have your save game, Andy?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Andy just called me sad, so that's not good.
All of your hair is so ugly in that game, though. Like the texture mapping for the hair is terrible.
Oh, the girl I created is not that attractive.
What?
No,
and you looked at that for 30 hours, Andy?
No, it's kind of that thing that like she looked interesting and it kind of endeared me toward it. I don't know, it was interesting. I could go on and on about it.
Do you also date interesting women?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So, Andy, what you're saying is you don't want to date your avatar.
Let's move this past into let's talk about how awesome Jack Wall is for a second. Okay.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about
the composer of the game.
Has he been confirmed for Mass Effect 2? I don't think he has.
What? I'm not playing it.
Well, he could still be doing it, but I don't think he's been confirmed. I've never kind of understood like why composers would be a big reveal per se, but
yeah.
Well, it depends on the composer. I mean, some composers are a big deal.
I don't know. Right. I've yet to like
have know a, to begin with.
Yeah, I've yet to have a game with as notable music as Mass Effect in the last year.
But you know, I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and check my press releases.
But speaking of Eden Prime, I mean, I think it's just a very bad landscape to be in. Like, it's not a space that you're awed by compared to the other spaces of Mass Effect. I'm trying to think of a few of the others, but when you get there, it's just kind of like, oh, I'm outdoors and I'm on the planets and it's being attacked, but there's no real like centerpiece or big battle moment or anything interesting visually to kind of draw you into that.
What about when things come out of the things and you're like, well, that's messed up because the human husks are like turning into things.
But it wasn't really what I expected out of that game. You know, it didn't really ease you in like a role play way.
Sure. I mean, maybe a better way of doing it. You think about the three choices you have at the beginning of Mass Effect to choose like your background, right? We can say like your parents were, like your colony was attacked. You grew up as a spacer. They sort of like jump from ship to ship, and there's another one. You grew up on Earth or something. I'm sort of thinking about those as origin stories that BioWare did in Dragon Age, where they actually implemented those. You know, they let you act those stories out before you came into the real game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's Dragon Age's gimmick. you don't want to use that in all their games.
You said earlier that you didn't think composers were much of a draw, but what about like the voiceover cast? Because they're announcing that today.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's certainly it's not.
Is that a draw?
It's a great source of geek credibility, right? I mean, it gets a lot of good attention and conversation.
But is that a draw you guys?
I've got an answer for you, Logan.
Wait, sorry. But just real quick, I want to put almost like a spoiler warning in front of this. Not that it's going to like reveal anything about the game, but for me, when I start playing a game that has like recognizable actors in the voice cast, and like the idea for me, or the joy of that for me, is not like, oh, this guy is in this game, I'm going to go play that game because of that. But when I'm playing the game, I find it, you know, kind of a joy of discovery, like recognizing that voice and wondering who is that. You know?
I agree, dude, totally.
So like if you want to avoid hearing who's doing voice work in Mass Effect 2, you know, we might want to skip beyond this.
Well, that said, when the game begins and the planet blows up, the guy who plays Admiral David Anderson is
Keith David.
Sorry.
No, Keith David was in the first one. He's got an awesome voice. He also just did Modern Warfare 2.
I want to go back to Logan's question though about does it draw? Because I have really no desire to play Halo ODST.
Uh huh.
But it's like a freaking Firefly cast reunion.
That's true.
Okay, that's pretty intense.
There you go.
Although in the press release they reveal that that Adam Baldwin is doing voice work in Mass Effect 2.
Yeah, he's here in Mass Effect 2.
As is Martin Sheen, which was kind of a good choice, but an interesting choice.
Interesting choice.
He's got a great voice. That
he's never been
deep and greedy, you know?
Yeah. Sure.
Personally, I'm really glad to see Seth Green back.
Right.
I loved the character Joker, you know?
Right. But yeah, like what Evan was saying, Martin Sheen, I don't think has ever done any voice work for a game, has he?
Not that I can think of.
Yeah. And so it's great to see him joining. And he does have a very distinctive voice.
Yeah. When he does documentaries, I always, you know, in 2 seconds, you know who it is.
Yeah. I was a big fan of The West Wing. So that, for me, that's instantly recognizable.
I mean, I'm certainly like, I'm a huge, like strong believer in the idea that actors don't make the best voice actors necessarily. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, you can see that in a lot of animated movies, not necessarily the Pixar ones, but others.
Voice acting is a very different skill than actually acting.
Absolutely.
That came out wrong. Yeah. That's saying that voice acting, but different skill than like on camera acting.
Even though I like the idea that Michael Hogan, who's the Captain Saul Tai, I guess, from Battlestar.
Well, he was the second in command. He wasn't a captain. He was a colonel.
Excuse me. I didn't know his rank. But
you were gonna get bitch slapped by all the Battlestar Galactica fans out there.
I guess so.
I just saved your ass.
I really appreciate that. So while I appreciate he's in there, I would rather have, you know, if he turned out to not be a good voice actor, nothing against him, I would rather have just a good voice actor, of course, to voice whatever character he's doing. He is a captain in the game, Mass Effect, though. That's why I just read it.
They've also got, just to read off a few of the other names they dropped, they've got Michael Dorn, who's Worf from Star Trek, Carrie Ann Moss, Trinity from The Matrix, and Trisha Helfer from Battlestar as well. Who am I leaving out there? I get everybody? A couple, like, one name I can't pronounce.
Your mama.
Yeah.
Did we say Adam Baldwin? Yeah, we did.
Yeah. Oh, and Yvonne Strahovski, who's with Adam Baldwin on Chuck.
That was the good old college try there with that one. Oof. You know, I'm looking at this right now. Apprentice brought it up earlier. It's on a different topic. It's this top 10 everything of 2009 list that Time wrote. And their number one top video game is Modern Warfare 2. You know, I played it. I enjoyed it. But I'm puzzling over the first lines in the write-up. It says, "This is a game that sends a message. Video games have something intelligent to say about contemporary military conflicts."
What? Modern Warfare 2?
Does anybody know what space?
I'm not sneering here. I really am not. I'm just asking.
I like how it says,
know what the guy's talking about.
Just go.
I like how he says contemporary military conflicts when the whole thing is fictional and like out of a Michael Bay movie.
Or it's like Michael Bay meets Tom Clancy. It's not. Ridiculous.
So, but nobody has an idea of like kind of what he's talking about, or
I don't think so.
Well, he tries to elaborate by saying like war isn't always declared and the battlefield isn't clearly marked. So he's interpreting the game. I mean,
so he played the first 5 minutes and listened to that voiceover.
Yeah, by Shadow.
No, isn't war declared in the game between the U.S. and Russia?
It is, but okay. I mean, this is what he's saying. Like you're playing as a elite task force, and like you're fighting in the back alleys, and like, you know, hunting down individuals, not like, you don't have these, you know, front lines versus front lines of battlefield style games. Maybe that's what he's used to playing. Obviously, this is somebody that doesn't really understand.
It's Lev Grossman.
Understand
the uniform, the context is a relic. Of
games. But it's a pointless choice for the reasons he's making.
I think what he's saying is that Modern Warfare says that modern conflict should be fought on snowmobiles.
And that is intelligent, damn it.
Yeah.
And they should be voiced by Carrie Ann Moss, formerly of The Matrix.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, that kind of clears it up. Speaking of twos, I'm very, very excited to hear that Dead Space 2 is being developed.
And for the PC.
Goodness. That was a great transition.
Hey, you know what?
No, I was being serious.
Cut his mic. And then it'll have multiplayer, too, which will be very interesting, because I've never I'm not used to dismembering people in multiplayer, you know, to the point where they can still come at me, and I can even like take off all three of their four limbs, and they can use one hand to keep coming at me.
I hope it's co-op multiplayer.
Yeah,
I don't see a lot of value in that game having versus multiplayer, but co-op definitely,
like Resident Evil 5 style co-op.
Right, or I mean, it's practically Left 4 Dead in space. So
I loved every minute of that game.
I liked it a lot, except, I mean, there were a couple, I wouldn't say every minute, but I liked it. And, you know, to the point where like, when it first came out on PC, it had a bug where if you had VSync enabled,
Yeah, that was terrible.
There was like some mouse lag, and it was driving me nuts. I couldn't really put my finger on what was wrong, but it was something was wrong about the way the mouse moved. But I still fought all the way through a shooter with messed up mouse controls and enjoyed it.
That's pretty amazing. It is. It's incredible. And there were like many, many times when, you know, you just have to, you sort of like, oh God, don't pee, you know? you just have to tighten up and make sure that you don't just, you know. The fear is like, you know, can takes over.
I'm told that the protagonist has learned the ability to speak.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, because that was something that kind of annoyed me about it. It was like they did go like the Gordon Freeman-esque route where they couldn't where he didn't talk and for no reason, and it didn't really work. I mean, Half-Life can get away with that because they've been doing it, you know, for 10 years, but Dead Space doing it now didn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah,
and it was not written well to support that.
I didn't mind it. Yeah, but.
I know. To me, it stood out like a sore thumb. It was awkward.
Well, there's a ton of sequels. Riding the wave of sequels here is the next season of Sam & Max coming in 2010 from Telltale.
Yeah, they just put up a teaser. I mean, they haven't like formally announced like this is what we're doing, but they put up a teaser saying, you know, Sam & Max in 2010. So there's almost certainly going to be another season of Sam & Max. And this is something we were speculating about, last podcast, what Telltale will do now that Monkey Island is over for the time being anyway. They just released the fifth and final episode of the season of Monkey Island, yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't gotten a chance to play it yet. It's definitely on my two playlist, but their next project is Sam & Max, which is good news.
Very good news.
I guess they actually bought that IP from LucasArts, I think.
Oh, really?
Yes.
They did. Yeah. So that's when they don't have to worry about licensing like they do with Monkey Island if they want to keep going on that one.
So why don't we see plushies? How awesome would that be to have a Sam plushie?
Yeah. Yeah. Or some like vinyl figurines. That'd be cool.
Uh-huh. It's only a matter of time.
Here is an interesting question that I have for all of you. There is an article on Ars Technica that talks about the issue of cloning a game. There's a developer, Genova Chen, who's created little indie games like Flow, and I think another one's been Flower on the PS3. And he found that somebody had released an identical, basically redone his game for the iPhone. And I forget what it was called, but he was like, whoa, that's my game. And the issue is cloning a game, theft? Is it like piracy?
Well, it's not like piracy, but it seems like it would be theft of intellectual property.
Mm-hmm.
I guess piracy is kind of theft. It depends on the definition you use, but it does seem like an infringement.
Is it the look or is it the gameplay mechanics? Like if the guy who invented Tetris, you know, invents that, can I not make something where blocks fall down?
Well, I know a lot of people have. So, yeah, I mean, apparently it's not illegal.
But if you look at some of the patent documents for games, I mean, they describe things in that kind of detail that Logan's talking about where, you know, the way a user attains points in the game, the way a mechanic works, the way a figure moves across the screen, they have to be very precise in how they describe things because there's this kind of like gray area for, you know, how that's interpreted. And I think with Flow, and I think the iPhone version of the game is called Aquatica. It's maybe easier to get away with it because these types of games are a little more abstract or they're smaller. They're not really mm-hmm. seen as necessarily like the like a fully produced thing of entertainment. Like if somebody copied Dead Space like wholesale, mm-hmm. you know, as much as possible, you could. There's a lot of different things you can point to.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think probably what the difference is between this and a game like Dead Space. Well, two things. Number one, this guy probably doesn't have the legal team that EA has. And second of all,
nobody does.
Yeah. with a game like Dead Space, there's also fiction that goes along with it, which is, it's inherently copyrighted. So you don't have to go through a lot of stuff. Somebody swipes your characters, calls them like, you know, I guess the lead character in Dead Space was Isaac. So if somebody put out an identical guy named Schmeisek, you could still sue them.
Instant bust.
Right. So you can't really lift an elaborate game like Dead Space wholesale. Even though there are a lot of games that use, like, for example, the shooter mechanic, it has been copied a bajillion times. But they all put their own, like, face on it. So, you know, it's a little bit different there. But with something that doesn't have a story to it, like these mini games, it seems to be a little bit murkier.
Yeah. When it's just a gameplay driven game, how do you quantify that because the other games have so much more in as part of the package.
If there are any legal experts out there who know their way around trademarks, copyrights, and patents, we'd love to hear on the, you know, specifics of the legality of that.
It kind of makes my blood run a little cold to think of a situation that may arise. You know, we're far from it now, but may arise in the next 2, 3, 5 years, where people are terrified to put out little games because they think, oh, well, part of the mechanics of this game, you know, somebody else is going to claim it as theirs and drag me to court, you know? And, you know, there goes the indie scene because everyone's scared and wants to be under the aegis or the imprimatur of a bigger developer.
I don't think that's a danger, because in the case of that, there, like, if you just release something on the internet, there's a record of it that's, you know, hey, here's when I put that out. And you've got, even if somebody then goes out and patents it, you've got record of prior art. So,
but I mean, what if you do something like you create something, a game with falling blocks, and the Tetris company, this is all hypothetical. The Tetris company comes and says, hey, you have blocks falling from the top of the screen to the bottom. You know, we want you to take that game off the market. Well, what are you going to do? I mean, you have no recourse. And all it takes is one successful lawsuit. And then nobody wants to take that chance again. Nobody.
Well, I mean, in that kind of situation, they might have a point that if you made an indie game where blocks are falling from the top of the screen to the bottom, that does sound like Tetris. So. Mm-hmm. And that may be an instance of somebody actually ripping off Tetris.
But, you know, I'm actually going so far as to say that I don't think you should be able to copyright that mechanic. I mean, you can come up with it and you can do it better than everybody else, but other people get to riff on it too. You know, it becomes, you know.
Yeah, of course.
I mean,
what you're saying is like concepts that are that abstract and that like generalized of like shapes falling from top of screen to bottom of screen, like, That's such a vague term. You can't copyright that. Maybe you can copyright the specific mechanic where, you know, four blocks in a line and this certain game mode to get to this many points, or a multiplayer mode, like something that's very technical that you can justify in code, right? Not necessarily this.
Or you can say like what is unique about my game are these five specific shapes, you know, that Tetris uses. I mean, seriously, that's the signature of your game. Like, you combine these, you've got my game.
Right. I mean, the intellectual property laws in this country are so, you know, ridiculous as it is that, you know, who knows exactly what, I mean, because the patents in particular are so abused by, you know, everybody. You know, they patent ridiculously vague things, that, and whether they're enforceable or not is all questionable. You know, I hesitate to even speculate on all this stuff without, you know, a law degree.
Yeah, that's true. And you know what? It's actually really starting to piss me off. Can we talk about the administrator instead?
Well, actually, I found something very interesting on copyright.gov. If you search just copyright games into Google, and this seems to be like an official statement or generalized statement from the Copyright Office, and it reads in the first paragraph, once a game has been made public, nothing in the copyright law prevents others from developing another game based on similar principles.
Whoa.
Copyright protects only the particular manner of an author's expression in literary, artistic, or musical form. So that kind of gives credence to what Dan was saying, where the fiction is an important component.
Yeah. Yay, I get credence.
Evan Lotti, Law Ninja. That was amazing.
Thank you.
Came out of nowhere, waving a book.
Now, Evan, did you find that using Google or Bing?
You don't want to open that can of worms again.
It was read to him by Carrie Ann Moss, formerly of The Matrix. I still want to talk about the administrator.
Oh, please. Yes, absolutely.
I mean,
do it.
What's going on there? What? I don't understand.
So first of all, the administrator of Team Fortress 2, you've probably heard her. You might not know her name. If you played any Team Fortress 2, there's an announcer in the background that basically calls out like the logistical situation of matches, like your flag has been captured, your intelligence has been captured, somebody's capturing your control points, the round is about to end, things like that. And she has this very, like, I don't know, how would you guys describe her? Like this almost like dominatrixy German, like authoritative tone of somebody that like is your boss. And
it's the, like, same woman from Portal, right?
It is.
Yeah. Yes.
Different voice, obviously.
Yeah. Yes. She's a voice actor who does both this voice and Gladys.
Mm-hmm.
But,
whoa. Yes.
Thank you for that.
That's the one. So, I mean, right now, Valve, I'm sort of worried that they're going to release it today. They have a history of releasing things on Thursdays, but there's kind of a bunch of interesting history here. So we know, like, the soldier and the demo are expected to be updated for Team Fortress 2. They're expected to get class updates, new items, and new maps associated with them.
They're the only ones that haven't so far.
Engineer as well. Right. He's gotten a smaller update, but not a huge one.
Yeah.
And we've also heard, like, months ago, I don't know if you guys remember this, that Valve is going to start producing comics of some kind. Or they're going to start doing work within, whether it was printed or online, I don't know. To tease, presumably, that the Soldier and Demo update, they released a comic of the administrator character who's never really been seen or, like, drawn within the TF2 fiction, if you want to call it fiction, before. And she's sort of talking about these new game mechanics, allegedly, that have to do with friendship, which are really interesting and kind of cryptic. And the other part of the story, and this is getting really complicated, I'm sorry, there's a TF2 update that fixed a couple, just a technical patch a few days ago, and included within that was some new voice files that, of course, the community picked up on immediately and noticed. And it's the administrator saying all of these things about mercenaries, about like characters being in trouble for being friends, basically, like, friendship is about to end in 30 seconds and so on. I don't know if we can play those, Andy.
Betrayal will not be tolerated. You cannot hide anything from us mercenaries, and now you will pay the price. All you ever do is disappoint and betray me. Cheating, stealing, friend-making. Success, despite your friendships. Success, no thanks to the best friends among you.
Just a lot of combination of cryptic information supposedly meant to tease the upcoming update.
It might be worth noting that in the comic, the friendship that forms is between players on opposite teams, like red and blue. So,
right.
Yeah, it could lead to some game-changing mechanics and new modes and stuff. So,
mm-hmm.
Intriguing.
It is.
Anybody have any guesses to what those mechanics will be, or there's just no idea yet?
There has to be some sort of, like, I don't know, because Valve has said that it's not going to be a new game mode. It's probably going to be a layer of new mechanics on top of the existing modes. So there must be some sort of situation where you can temporarily gain immunity between your player and an opposing player. I'm really not sure. I'm kind of at a loss. It's hard to imagine how
you can be friends with somebody on the other team.
Exactly. Like, how could they make that work, either in terms of damage or, like, teaming up or completing a separate objective? I have no idea. I'm really lost, but I'm sure they'll do something interesting with it.
Well, we'll work on getting better intel for y'all and bring you some dirt on it next week, perhaps. How soon do you think we're going to know more about what's coming up?
They wouldn't tease it like this if it wasn't going to be within the next few weeks. I was estimating that the class updates would come next year, but I think they might come by year's end, honestly.
Well, on the official website, yesterday they posted friendship ends in 1 day.
Right.
So I've been refreshing all day, hoping.
Right. Hey, stop refreshing, like, over there. Like, knock it
right
off.
Right now it's just F5.
Knock it off. Well, there is already good news coming out on the heels of the release of Zombie Island of Dr. Ned for Borderlands. Not only is it released on PC now, but the second DLC has already been announced, which has the, it's called Mad Moxie's Underdome Riot, which reminds me of something.
Beyond Thunderdome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never actually seen that Mad Max movie. I think it That one's supposed to be kind of ridiculous, right?
It's got it was like where it gets kind of yuck, fun, funny, and blah, blah, blah.
And that's where the franchise died, as I recall.
Yeah, the second one was great, but.
There's been a screenshot released. It's got a claptrap robot in a tux, and there's a sign saying arena, which implies that it's going to be a very like versus mode DLC that will beef up the kind of deathmatch stuff they've got in the game already, which is like a very Quake 3 style. Or Quake style deathmatch setup they have in there. It's kind of basic, kind of tacked on for people who are into that kind of thing. But this might beef that up considerably.
Nice. It's really interesting to me that presumably if we're thinking that this Mad Moxie DLC is coming within the next month or two, that Gearbox is kind of adopting the Fallout model, Fallout 3 model of DLC.
Yeah, I mean it seems to be a pretty popular model all around. I mean it's also happening with Dragon Age, just pumping out DLC quickly after release, which makes a lot of sense, honestly, because I mean they want to capitalize on the PR they've already done, all the marketing, getting all those Dragon Age ads up in front of people on Dig. I always see Dragon Age ads on Dig, and the Dragon Age seems to be pretty much everywhere. So why not ride that and sell more DLC on top of it?
For sure.
It's interesting, Evan, that you bring up Fallout 3 DLC, because we were talking about this on the last OXM podcast with Todd Howard, and how they had the balls to just change their ending basically with the DLC. Mm-hmm. Now, I just read your review of Borderlands, Dan. I haven't played through the whole thing. And you were saying, the ending is terribly unfulfilling.
It's awful.
What if they, did the same thing? Gave it a proper ending.
I would love to see that. Because the game does deserve a better ending than that.
That could be a cool trending trending game topics.
I mean, it is a tough thing to do. I mean, you were saying, like, it did take some balls on Bethesda's part to do that. Mm-hmm. Because that is like, it's your story, especially with Fallout, like the story was such a big part of the game. With Borderlands, the story really kind of fell off a cliff about two-thirds of the way through the game. So
it's more like changing a lot.
Yeah. For them, it would be a really good idea to do. It would be harder to do. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if that's fair to say. They're both very hard to do.
Spin-off or something.
I mean, there's more freedom within Borderlands, because as much as the story ends, like your character persists. You can start new campaigns. You can enter your friends' campaigns. So you can bring this content into new meaning, like more easily than the Fallout story, I think.
Right. Yeah, I don't know what I was saying there. It would be more difficult to weave into the existing story in Fallout than it would be to build one in Borderlands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the CEO of EA was just saying last week, or this week, I think, that he sees DLC, as not just a great trend, but a way of addressing piracy. Not just because it's activated, but because you give people, you just try to give people what it is they want. You know, smaller amounts, more games, more content.
Well, he sees it as if somebody downloads a game and plays it and likes it, and they want more content, well, maybe they'll come and buy that content.
Yeah, exactly.
I kind of see that as wishful thinking. I don't think that's going to really turn any pirates into customers, honestly.
I actually don't. I really don't think it's wishful thinking. I think that's a smart model, because piracy is a drag. It's really hard. It's really messy. It's dangerous. It's inconvenient in a lot of ways. But people just want this stuff. And, I think people don't download music just because they're greedy. Some people are, but they do it because it's easy and
well, so is iTunes. It used to be the case that was a legitimate argument that going to pirated sources where it was an easier way of getting the content. It's not anymore. I mean, you can get a game through Steam easier than you can through or any other download service. You can get it easier than you can through going to a pirate site. So I mean, that's just not a legitimate argument anymore, in my view. Unless you're
I think it is for games, though.
Well, I don't think it is.
I mean, cracks rarely work perfectly. You know, you hear all the time of how, you know, it's, they well, don't we work seem to be, the game or something like that.
We seem to be arguing the same point here, that piracy is more difficult than getting the legitimate copy.
Oh, yeah. But I think that, so that's why I think people will be incented, you know, by a really good game that they enjoyed to go out and buy it so they can continue getting the DLC.
Well, I don't think that they are, because I mean, I think that, going out and pirating a game is, you know, once they've made that choice, why would they go and buy like extra parts for it? I mean, they already decided, hey, you know, I'm going to steal this game, not because I couldn't get it just as easily online, but because I didn't want to pay for it. So I think that the motivations of these people that are pirating games now is not that it was easier to pirate it, because they wanted to steal it and they didn't want to pay
for it. I think it's because, like, am I going to like this game? Am I going to play it for an hour and go, God, this is a buggy, a ridiculous, you know, poorly produced game that crashed even when I tried to install it, you know? Or they find that they, you know, they play it and it's smooth, it's entertaining, it's well produced, and they're like, yeah, this turns out to be a really quality product after all.
But then those guys, like, that's like one of the arguments I hear justifying piracy these days, which is, well, there wasn't a demo for this game. I wanted to try it before I buy it.
I didn't say it was a justification.
Well, I mean, it's a rationalization. Mm-hmm. But I mean, those guys, like, if that's what they're actually doing and they're not just lying, then they were going to buy the game anyway. So yeah. The people that are pirating the game, that John Riccitiello wants to turn into customers, I don't think that DLC is going to turn them into customers.
Okay. Well, I mean, now that we've established that I'm right, let's talk about our playlists.
Yes, please.
Dan, what have you been up to?
I played a bunch of Saboteur for the review, which just came out. It is a lot of fun. I've been enjoying that game quite a bit.
Wait till you see his review.
It did come out very well. We're proud of that one.
Awesome.
But I mean, there is a problem with it that unfortunately I did not catch, because I've been playing on a GTX 285 NVIDIA graphics card. Apparently on ATI cards, there is a major crash bug that makes it kind of unplayable for a lot of people, which is really unfortunate, because it is a fun game. There is a workaround for it that you can find if you just Google around or look on their official forums, that requires you to disable, like, if you're on a quad core, it requires you to disable all but one core of your CPU for the purposes of playing the game, which then makes the game run really slow. Mm. So it's a really bad situation. They say they're working on a solution and hopefully they will have a patch out. But if you have an ATI card, don't buy it until there's a patch to fix that.
I shouldn't have laughed. That's not funny. Sorry.
Yeah. And it's really sad because
it is sad.
Yeah. Because pandemic got closed down right after shipping the game. Yeah. And if they were still around, maybe they could have fixed this and not, you know, have had this kind of bad taste in people's mouths, ATI users' mouths after, you know, for their last game. Cause it is a lot of fun. I mean, it's, you get to blow stuff up a lot, you know, and that's a lot of fun. And, you know, if you don't know what it is, it's an open world game set in Nazi occupied Paris in 1940. You are a guy that goes around and blows stuff up, Nazi stuff, blow up Nazi stuff. You know, driving, running, shooting, all that. So that's what I've been playing.
Evan, how about you? What have you been playing?
Yeah. So other than some Left 4 Dead 2, I had the joyous opportunity to return to Arma 2 last weekend, played about, 8 or 9 campaigns on my server with 10 or so guys, and it was fantastic. And there's a wonderful mod I've been playing with. There's a Santa Sleigh model for Arma 2, and it basically replaces like one of the strike fighters, like a helicopter, fighter jet.
That's
and
amazing,
basically, you install it, put it in the game, and I've been shooting it down with rocket launchers.
You are so getting a lump of coal.
Why do you know?
I'm gonna try and make a video and throw it somewhere so you guys can see that nonsense.
It's literally a war on Christmas.
Do not let Bill O'Reilly Prentice. Get a hold of this video.
What have you been up to, Prentice?
Arma with Evan. That was it. We played this weekend.
Gotcha. How about you, Eric?
I finally have a computer that won't crash running Batman. And dun, 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 oh my goodness.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I wish I could be where you are right now.
Holy oh. Batman Arkham Asylum Batman.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. okay. You know, yeah. It's well, exciting.
Welcome to the club. How about you, Andy?
I've been playing Modern Warfare 2, Dragon Age, and the Monkey Island last two episodes.
Oh,
I'm on
nice.
The last one finally, so
just a nice trinity you got there.
Yeah, it's been amazing, actually. I can't believe I have that much gaming time.
Which is your favorite out of those three?
Monkey Island. Or Dragon Age. Is Dragon Age.
But well, Monkey Island, or Dragon Age, Monkey Island, then Modern Warfare, huh?
Yeah.
I have been playing Saboteur. I just started, though, and one of the first things I got to do was blow something up.
Yeah.
And I love blowing things up. Everybody does. And it has a naked mode too, which I didn't see that coming.
That's true. And the PC, unlike the console version, you have to download, like the nudie stuff is downloadable. Or you have to download it. So if you buy a secondhand copy of it, you don't get the nudie bits.
You don't get boobs.
Well, and it's really kind of hilarious too, because the only difference is a pasty.
You know, yeah, it is. It's kind of absurd.
Yeah.
Next week, we're going to be talking a lot about our take on World of Warcraft patch 3.3, and we're going to be making fun of whoever isn't able or willing to fight back when we make fun of them. This is Logan Decker, your podcast host, and whether you're a Democrat or Republican, good or evil, or boxers or briefs, we want to hear from you. Just pick up the phone and call us toll-free at 877-404-1337 at extension 724 and record your questions for the PC Gamer Podcast there, or send them in MP3 format to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. That's pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. Keep it short, and don't think we haven't been noticing that lots of you have been doubling up on your questions lately. You can also subscribe to our awesome magazine by heading over to pcgamer.com and filling out our interactive form on the internet. We're also looking for gamers who crave instant fame by having their awesome screenshots and photos of their rigs and gaming setups printed in the magazine. Send them to letters@pcgamer.com and you just might see your handiwork in the PC Gamer Letters section. For the PC Gamer Podcast crew, this is a rock legend, Logan Decker, saying thanks for listening, and we're looking forward to getting together with all of you again next week.